When you're hiring for your small business, you want to find quality professionals that are right for the role. That's why you have to check out LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn Jobs has the tools to help find the right professionals for your team faster and for free. Have you ever used it before, producer Naya?
I have, but I was one of the quality professionals that you mentioned looking for the perfect role. And guess what? I found one.
Oh, wow, that's amazing. What job was it?
It was this very job, and I got it by using LinkedIn Jobs. So if it wasn't for the platform, I wouldn't be sat here speaking with you, Giles. Now imagine that.
Oh, wow, that is truly amazing. Well, we've got a lot to thank them for. And it proves that LinkedIn isn't just a job board. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place.
And on LinkedIn, 86% of small businesses get a qualified candidate within 24 hours. Hire professionals like a professional on LinkedIn.
Post your job for free at linkedin.com/purple. That's linkedin.com/purple to post your job for free. Terms and conditions apply. When you're hiring for your small business, you want to find quality professionals that are right for the role. That's why you have to check out LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn Jobs has the tools to help find the right professionals for your team faster and for free. Have you ever used it before, producer Naya?
I have, but I was one of the quality professionals that you mentioned looking for the perfect role. And guess what? I found one.
Oh, wow, that's amazing. What job was it?
It was this very job, and I got it by using LinkedIn Jobs. So if it wasn't for the platform, I wouldn't be sat here speaking with you, Giles. Now imagine that.
Oh, wow, that is truly amazing. Well, we've got a lot to thank them for. And it proves that LinkedIn isn't just a job board. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place.
And on LinkedIn, 86% of small businesses get a qualified candidate within 24 hours. Hire professionals like a professional on LinkedIn.
Post your job for free at linkedin.com/purple. That's linkedin.com/purple to post your job for free. Terms and conditions apply.
Hello, I'm Giles Brandreth, and you are...
Susie Dent.
And look, Susie... Today, I want us to begin with a bit of a vocal warm-up, because my daughter said to me that she listens to podcasts going to work on the underground, and if the diction isn't clear, she misses things, and obviously she doesn't want to miss what we're saying. So, to get the mouth ready, I learned this from a great actor called Sir Donald Sinden.
Yes.
Did you ever know who I
knew? I do know Donald Sinden. My mum absolutely loved Donald Sinden.
Well, he was a great classical actor. As well as being on television and things like Never the Twain, The Two of Us. Marvellous man. Very fruity.
Yes.
Very fruity. And he said to me, Giles, when it comes to diction, you've got to remember that vowels are what give you volume and consonants are what give you clarity. Vowels for volume, consonants for clarity. And he had this little warm-up exercise. He always did it in the dressing room before going onto the stage. So we'll do it now. I'll do it once, then you can repeat it, and the whole nation can join in.
Please don't ask me to roll my R's because I can't. For a linguist, this is a big impediment, I can tell you. But apparently it's genetic, whether you can or not.
Well, fortunately...
And I can't.
This doesn't involve any R's, really.
Good.
This involves vowels and consonants.
Oh, good.
And
right up my street.
Right up your street. Here goes. Hip bath, lavatory, lavatory. Bidet, douche. You got that?
I think so. Hip bath, lavatory, lavatory, bidet, douche.
And remembering, it's vowels for volume, consonants for clarity. All together now. One, two, three.
Hip
bath, lavatory, lavatory, bidet, douche. Gotta get the douche going.
Douche.
Let's just do it once more.
Okay.
And I want everybody joining in. And don't, if you're on the underground or the bus, don't feel self-conscious. No, don't. Don't. There may be somebody else listening at the very same moment to this
maybe
podcast.
Maybe whisper douche there if you're looking at someone.
Yes. Okay. Ready. One, two, three.
Hip bath, lavatory, lavatory, bidet, douche.
Not everyone knows what a bidet is.
No.
Or indeed how to spell it.
I have a nice etymological fact about a bidet.
Oh, tell me the etymological fact about a bidet.
It comes from the French for pony, because you sit astride it.
Oh, good grief.
Yes.
Well, you're rather giving away what it is. It is a piece of bathroom masonry or...
Furniture.
Bathroom furniture. And it became a vogue item in the 1950s. When I was a very little boy, I remember people talking about bidets, and I wasn't quite sure what it was for. You know, what people use them for. And then I heard a lovely story about a film director called Billy Wilder.
Mm.
Heard of Billy Wilder?
I have.
Who made Some Like It Hot, that great Marilyn Monroe film. Anyway, made lots of movies in the 1950s. And he was in France making a film in the 1950s, and his wife wanted to have a bidet back in Hollywood. She wanted to have the first bidet in Hollywood. And so she said to her husband, you got to get a bidet when you're in Paris. Get a ship back. We want to have the first bidet in L.A. They're all the talk in Europe, all the rage. I got to have a bidet. Anyway, Billy Wilder gets a day off, goes all around Paris. He cannot find a bidet anywhere. There's been a run on the bidets. So there's no bidet to send to his wife. So he sends her a cable, a wire, a telegram explaining this. And he says simply in this telegram, unable find bidet, stop. Suggest headstand in shower, stop.
Like it. I like it.
But it's a French word, isn't it?
It is, absolutely. As I say, little bidet, pony.
Little pony, a bidet, a little pony. And you sit astride it. Yeah.
Sit astride it, yes. I haven't tried, have you?
No. How do you spell bidet?
With a T.
B-I-D-E-T.
Yes.
Why is it not B-I-D-E, acute accent?
Because it's a diminutive in French, which means it's a little pony, is as I say, where it's the origin of it.
So anything that is like minuet is a little something, a
yes,
little
minuet. You don't tend to have your ear cutes when that happens.
It's a little something.
So this has taken me way back to my university days. But yes, no ear cute. And actually, you'll find in English, and we'll talk about foreign words, won't we, at some point in another podcast. But when French words go into the dictionary, they tend to lose their accents over time.
Oh.
Mm.
So there are fewer and fewer accents in
there
French
are.
As the years go by.
Well, not in French itself, but in French words that then get naturalised in English. We tend to drop the accents.
Now, tell me all about this spelling. This spelling thing is a bit of a nightmare. Who invented it? Who decided how we spell words? Does it matter?
Gosh, huge, huge questions there. Okay, I'll start with the first one. Who invented it? The answer, as with the entirety of the English language, is we all did. We have no academy, we have no government, we have nobody saying this is how you're going to spell things from now on.
We know we have no government, we read the newspapers.
However, we do obviously have a standard. And the trouble with English spelling is that we sort of had a standard once printing came about, once William Caxton had his printing press started to distribute and disseminate lots and lots of different texts. We kind of evolved a standard then. But what happened then was people meddling with our language, whereby scholars, for example, during the Renaissance decided to return English to its classical roots. And so they decided to stick in a whole load of silent letters to show that they knew the Latin origin of some of these words. But the pronunciation didn't change. So doubt, B, they stuck that in because the Latin dubitum. Simon,
oh, good
L,
grief.
Et cetera, et cetera.
Hold on. Now, this is fascinating. So doubt.
I mean, yes.
You're talking about the Renaissance. What period is this? When is Caxton? When up until William Caxton, the inventor of the printing press?
Yes, we're talking 16th century there.
People just spoke words to one another.
And it was largely oral, yes.
And then you wrote down a word the way it sounded.
Yes.
Which is why Shakespeare, there are sort of 16 or 26 versions of in his own handwriting.
Because his own name.
Of his own name. Because he just wrote down what it sounded like that day.
None of them correspond to the one we use today.
So up until that time, which is around 1600, people are really spelling words any way they like.
Yes, it was just glorious abandon. It was wonderful. We had dialect words. We had, just completely individualised spelling. And nobody really cared because, as you say, communication was largely oral. If it was written down, as long as it was clear, and in those days it was largely phonetic. So to go back to doubt, that was spelt D-O-W-T in Old English.
As sounds doubt.
Perfect.
Doubt, that's the very word.
Perfect. But no, probably single scribe, as I say, who was translating quite, you know, in a really positive effort to translate from Latin into vernacular English so people could understand the Bible more, for example. You know, so that was a very extremely good cause. But they saw that DOWT and thought, hang on a second, the Latin is dubitum. And
which means what?
Which means doubt.
Oh, it's the same word.
Same word.
And so our English word doubt comes from the Latin dubitum, and they thought the origin is D-U-B-I-T-U-M.
So they thought, I'm going to stick a B in there. And the W became a U, and we're stuck with that silent B. We never, ever pronounced it, which is extraordinary. Same, plumber. Why doesn't plumber rhyme with lumber? That goes back to the Romans' word plumbum, meaning a lead pipe.
Oh, how wonderful.
So it makes absolute sense, etymologically speaking, but we didn't have the B before those scribes came around. So much meddling with their.
So the scribes are the characters who appear in the cartoons.
Or Blackadder.
Yes. And they're writing at great length with beautiful manuscripts.
Oh, go to the Bodleian Library and you will see the results of their work. I'm not undermining what they did. It was astonishing the amount of effort that they put into it.
So somebody, these scribes, tried to impose an order because they thought, we want to share this. They were driven probably by religious zeal. Many of these people, the educated people, were monks and they were writing out and they wanted people to be able to share these biblical texts. And they thought it'll be easier if it's all written in a script that everybody can understand and share.
Yes.
So it was well-intentioned.
It was well-intentioned. And they saw in Latin a pure language, a classical language that followed rules, that had integrity. And so they wanted to impose a little bit of that on the chaos, as they saw it, of you know, old English, the Anglo-Saxon English.
Excuse me, may I stop you for a moment? Chaos. Why is that not K-A-O-S?
Because it's from the Greek.
Chaos.
I know, we were influenced by the French there.
Hold on. Latin, Greek, French.
Oh, so many influences.
Tell me about chaos and why the C-H in chaos is hard.
Okay. Oh, why it's hard. I thought you were
because
saying...
Because in Irish they say, oh, terrible. In the plays of Sean O'Casey is a terrible case of chassis. The world's in a terrible state of chassis. I apologise for my Irish accent. Chassis is how they sometimes say chaos in Irish. Mm-hmm. Why do we say chaos?
Well, I think it must have been the fault, if you want to say fault, but I actually love all this complete lovely, glorious mess, as I say. I think it was under influence of the pesky Normans because the French for chaos is chaos or
chaos.
Hard K. And so we
spelled with
just
a K.
Copied them. No, C-H.
But pronounced chaos.
Yeah. So, I'd have to get a French etymological dictionary as to why they made it a hard C. But you're right. I've never thought about why it should be chaos. Chaos.
So these pronunciations go back 1,000 years and more. Where does it all come from, this, and why do we put up with it?
Well, I think it's great that we put up with it. Well, as I say, we have no academy, although there are societies.
You say we have no academy as though some people do have academies.
Yes, France, Spain, Germany to some extent. They like to impose some kind of linguistic government.
And but the academy in these countries, these are po-faced people.
No,
probably.
I don't think they're po-faced. Oh. I think they just care for the integrity and purity of their language. But, you know, resistance is futile, as they say. And we've talked about this, haven't we? How sort of French academy is helpless in the face of English imports. But foreign influences are key when it comes to spelling because part of the reason why we spell things differently is we have hoovered up words from every single tongue that we have encountered in the history of English and English speaking. And so we borrow from native words, and quite often we will borrow the spelling, whether that's French, whether it's from Native American languages, whether it's from going right back to Latin and Greek. All of these different influences have come to bear upon our languages, with Vikings, for example, as well. So the reason is that this will account also for why our plurals are so irregular. You know, why is it moose but not meese, like goose and geese, etc.? Answer is they come from completely different languages.
Oh, so it usually is go back to the source of the word.
Yes.
What is the correct spelling of hiccup?
Hiccup. Well, it began as a hiccough.
Oh, it's a hoff. It's a cough in which you make a hic sound.
Which makes a hic sound. I have to just add this. This is completely random and of no use to anyone. But the German for a hiccup is schluckauf, which is a swallow up Which I love. Can I say,
it's of great use to a lot of people. Some people on first dates find the conversation difficult to make.
Does it dry up?
And can I say, this is... So if you're listening to this and you've been unlucky in love so far, listen to what Susie is saying, and you can play these wonderful lines when there's a sort of terrible silence at the dinner table and you can't think what to say next. You can say, oh, I think I'm getting the hiccups. Did you know that the German word for hiccup is, said again?
Schluck auf.
Schluck auf.
Yes, swallow up.
Swallow up. Schluck auf. Swallow up. Yeah. Drink up. This date is over. Yeah. Guten Tag.
Oh, dear. Okay. So, we'll tackle stereotypes
but hold on.
Another time.
Hiccup. Yes. Yes. Then becomes, because I would say nowadays, hiccup would be acceptable as H-I-C-C-U-P.
It is in the dictionary as such, and that we changed that simply because it made sense. Rather like the German, in fact, to think that we are hicking upwards. The hic is purely echoic, as they say, onomatopoeic. It just is, isn't it? It's born of its sound. And then it seems like we're doing it upwards. So it makes sense to say hiccup instead of a hiccough.
Do you know how to cure the hiccups?
I've tried various things. Have you got a novel remedy?
Well, no, but the drinking water out of the wrong side of the cup does work. Okay. I find standing on your head works. Mm. A little bit more difficult as the years go by, but I'm ready to give it a go. And a shock, a fright.
Right.
That can really work. Of course, it can kill you.
But you can't do it to yourself, that's the thing. Well, you can't tickle yourself. You can't surprise yourself, can you?
Can you not tickle yourself?
No, absolutely not.
Are you sure?
Positive.
Really?
Yes. I'm so glad about this. I have a tickling phobia. That's for another time.
You really can't tickle yourself.
No. What can you? It's like you can't. No.
This,
and you can't.
Can I say this is why people are tuning in? Because, you know, with this amazing something rhymes with purple, you live and learn. Then, of course, you die and forget it all. But in the interim, you can't tickle yourself.
You can't tickle yourself. There are two types of tickling. One is called gargalesis, which is the heavy, sort of rough and tumble tickling kind. And the other is
gargalesis, forgive
gargalesis.
Me. Is that one of your trio of words for today?
Oh, it could be.
Gargalesis. What is the origin of that?
Good point.
Gargle?
It's going to be Latin or Greek because we tend to give those to medical conditions. Leave that one with me.
I'll okay, we'll come back on gargalesis.
And then the light tickling with a feather kind is called kinesmesis. Anyway, I'll just throw that
kinesmesis.
In. Kinesmesis.
So you can ask your date. When you've got through that first bit of making the conversation about the hiccups, you can say, do you fancy either a, what were the two of them?
Some gargalesis or some kinesmesis.
I think we begin with the kinesmesis. How do you spell the kinesmesis?
K-N-I-S-M-E-S-I-S.
Hey, it's Kaylee Cuoco for Priceline. Ready to go to your happy place for a happy price? Well, why didn't you say so? Just download the Priceline app right now and save up to 60% on hotels. So whether it's Cousin Kevin's Kazoo Concert in Kansas City, go Kevin! Or Becky's Bachelorette Bash in Bermuda, you never have to miss a trip ever again. So download the Priceline app today. Your savings are waiting.
Go to your happy place for a happy price. Go to your happy price, Priceline.
Hey there! Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower-than-low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
The reason I think spelling is important, and I know I am old school, is it's all about communication, but we live in a world where people are judgmental. And if you apply for a job, you send an email in applying for the job, and there are spelling mistakes in the application, or you do a CV and it contains spelling mistakes, people will think, oh, this person is sloppy, they don't know what standard English is. Mm. So people, I think, need help with spelling. And Fortunately, there are rules for spelling, but unfortunately, they are not very helpful.
No.
I mean, the principal rule that people know is the I before E except after C. It's the most famous of all the spelling rules and the most frustrating because, for a start, people get the rule all wrong. It's I before E except after C, except when your foreign neighbour, Keith, receives 8 counterfeit beige sleighs from feisty, caffeinated weightlifters. That's my example of, you know, when the rule doesn't apply. The point is, the rule is not I before E except after C. The rule is, it's I before E except after C if the vowel rhymes with B.
But that doesn't work for C's.
It works a lot. It works for achieve, believe, brief, chief, deceive, fiend, receipt, receive. What doesn't it work for?
Seize.
What?
Seize.
How do you spell? What's the word?
To seize the moment.
S-E-O-I-C.
No,
it doesn't work, for caffeine either, does it?
The I before E works for about 20% of English
words.
Oh,
I'm thinking of lots more it doesn't work. It doesn't work for species, does it?
No.
Or protein. Or plebeian. Oh, Lord. So what do we do?
What we do is we learn a bit of etymology.
Okay.
I would say that. So if you learn some word origins and delve, like word detectives do, into the history of particular words,
yep,
you can really help yourself out. So definitely one of the top commonly misspelled words, definitely. Most people, I say most, a lot of people will spell it definitely,
yep,
which, you know, which is understandable, but as you say in a CV, slightly worrying. Remember that it comes from the Latin. This is straight etymology. This is kind of etymology. This is slightly boring kind
etymology
of
etymology means the source, the origin.
Yes, the word origin. So remember that it comes from the Latin finire, which gave us Finnish. No, but it gave us Finnish. So remember that definitely is a sibling of Finnish, and you'll get the two I's. Because definite means something that comes to a conclusion.
Finite.
So remember that.
Definitely.
Yes. Now, if you're really, really getting into advanced spelling, and believe me, when I talk to my daughter about what she has to learn at school, at a very tender age, she'll have things like apocryphal.
Ooh.
Can you spell apocryphal for me, Giles?
Trying to remember what it means. Apocryphal.
Apocryphal story
is a story that is, oh, it's made up. People believe it to be true, but it isn't.
Yeah, that's how we use
it's
it today.
It's invented.
Yes.
A-P-O-C-R-Y-P-H-A-L.
Excellent.
Excellent.
Excellent. Now, the key thing there is it's got a Y, and that's because it's related to crypt. And that's because apocryphal, I know it's a bit of a stretch, but apocryphal originally meant something that was sort of secret, that it was kept private, so people would never actually find out the truth, which is why they made things up about it.
Now, I think it's good to have little tricks. I mean, I remember, for example, that the word achieve, A-C-H-I-E-V-E, I before E, to achieve success. You know, you achieve by remembering the rule I before E. So there are different ways. I mean, but it is difficult, isn't it?
It's incredibly difficult.
I think the trick is to think the word. If there's a word that you find particularly difficult, that you know you do, you can never remember whether address is one D or two Ds in the word address.
Mm-hmm.
You know, to address an envelope or somebody lives in an address. You think of a phrase, you know, directly delivered letters arrive safe and sound. So it becomes a kind of mnemonic, kind of memory thing.
Mm-hmm.
Is that useful?
Mnemonics are good if you can remember the mnemonics.
Because usually the same people make the same mistakes with the same words. So almost it's worth producing your list of words that you always get wrong, isn't it?
Always. I mean, we all have blind spots. Mine is consensus. Consensus, I just want to spell with a C in the middle.
Ah, and it's an S, is it?
It's an S.
C, con, S. And so what would your clue be for remembering consensus?
Well, I just remember that's got absolutely nothing to do with the census, taking a census, which is a very negative way of
taking
remembering.
Taking a census is a con.
Very good.
Yeah.
I like that.
So it's C-O-N-C-E-N-S-U-S.
Yes.
Suss it out.
Going back to word origins, the word terra, T-E-R-R-A, meaning earth, you'll find in lots of things, you know, terracotta, obviously, baked earth, but Mediterranean, it's sea in the middle of the earth, and it's got a double R. So just remember the terra. Terrain is there as well. It's wonderful because now the school curriculum, certainly in Britain, does include learning about word origins. And I think this is really, really going to help.
And that's going to help people get, what about millennium?
Millennium, if you remember that mila meant 1,000 in Latin, so that's a little bit tricky.
Well, I tell you my one for that, because I had to do that. You know, when the millennium came around, you know, 20 years ago now. It's 1,000 years, isn't it? A millennium.
Yes.
And incidentally, when did the new millennium begin? Was it in 2001 or was it in 2000?
Well, I thought 2000.
Yeah, I think it's 2001. I think 2000 is the end of the last millennium. So I think it's later than you think.
It's all a matter of perspective.
Or it's earlier than you think. Anyway, I think we've got another year to go.
Okay.
It's giving me an extra year of life. Millennium is 1,000 years. My clue is this. It's a big number and therefore calls for the max. Two M's, two I's, two I's, two L's, two N's. So it's a double everything. Millennium.
I like that. Yeah.
That's good, isn't it? Mississippi.
That's hard.
It's a big river, double the size of most, double S, double S, double P. Or Mississippi, Mississippi water. Anyway, I've had fun listing all the words that I find, you know, Parliament. I always found spelling Parliament difficult. And then I thought when I was there, because I, as you know, I was an MP until the people spoke, the bastards. I was in Parliament. Parliament, home of the big I am.
Oh, love
you get
that.
It? I am parliament. But again, that's the origin of it, isn't it? Parlying.
It's talking.
It's talking, isn't
yes.
it? So parlez-vous.
Yeah. It's the parlour. The parlour in the old term for the sort of sitting room in a house. That was where you did all your
Do you have words that you find difficult to spell?
On Countdown, quite often, I just have a sudden blind spot. Do you ever have these? Where I just think, actually, either looks really odd when you write it down. E-I-T-H-E-R.
Yeah.
There's no other way to spell it, but I have this sudden crisis of confidence.
Can I say?
And I'm supposed to be the arbiter.
Whenever I see the word shop fitting, I always see the word shop lifting.
Lifting. Mm-hmm.
And I'm not alone in that.
No.
It's quite curious. We began with doubt and there being no B. I have been trying to construct an alphabet of words where there is a silent letter in the word. Do you know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
So, aesthetic.
Mm-hmm.
You're not actually pronouncing the A, are you? Bread.
Oh, or the it.
There's no
Oh, you are,
A.
actually. Sorry.
Are you?
Backtrack.
No, you're not. Aesthetic. The A isn't there. Bread. The A isn't there. D. B. Debt.
Mm-hmm.
You can't hear that, can you? C. Indictment. Muscle. Silent C.
Indictment, by the way, remember it's related to dictation because it's all about telling people. Dictionary, dictator, all of that stuff.
Indictment. That's why there's a C there.
Mm.
Handkerchief.
Yes.
Is there a D in handkerchief or not?
Not the way we pronounce it.
No.
But actually, I'll come back to that because I have a whole load of words that have these sort of secret lives that were an open secret, but we've changed the sound and so we don't recognise that secret anymore.
Oh.
I'll tell you in a minute.
Okay. It's an interesting one because handkerchief, hanky is H-A-N-K-I-E.
Yes.
But handkerchief.
Kerchief, your hand.
Yeah. But you don't pronounce the D, so it's a silent D. Wednesday, you don't pronounce the D in Wednesday, and yet there is one. Fate. You don't really pronounce the E in fate, do you? Isn't
no, you don't tend to, when there's a vowel at the end. Well,
fine,
an e
give,
at the end
like,
word,
name. I mean, you know, it's a waste of an E. Halfpenny. There's no F in halfpenny, is there? But it's a half penny, that's how you spell it. Oh, these are G, nat, nor, high, phlegm, sign, though. H, daughter, echo. I, business. Business?
Business.
Yes,
there's an I. It was all about being busy.
There's it really is. Anyway.
Oh, no, you haven't come to K, my favourite, because
okay.
We used to pronounce all the Ks.
I will just go to K today. We'll do the rest another day. My I was business and friend, because it's F-R-E-N-D, but there's an I in there somewhere.
Mm-hmm.
K is, the ones I've listed are knee.
Knee.
Knife.
Knife.
Knite. Knight. Not. Cannot. And no.
Okay. We used to pronounce the K's and I wish
joking.
That we did. No, so knight is from the German Knecht, meaning a boy, because a knight was a young squire.
Knecht
was a young
is a boy
attendant
in German.
Upon a squire. Knecht, yeah. Der Knecht.
If you're new to this podcast, I ought to explain that one of Susie's obsessions is the beauty of the German language. You've just got to go along with that. And actually, the way she speaks it, she does make it sound. I think she was there during her adolescent years, because when she says these German words, she sort of looks 15 years younger. So she looks about 17. And the way you said boy there, I think Knecht. there was an echo. Yeah.
Okay, so we used to pronounce the K, Knecht, and then Knight. Gradually got lost because we simply couldn't get our tongue round it. And actually so many instances in English of where we couldn't quite get the sound of the word that we borrowed, and so we mangled it completely and have lost all trace of where we began. I will come back to that. But yes, we had knight, which would, of course, differentiate from night time. And it was really, really useful. We talked about knees. I've hurt my knee. But as I say, we couldn't quite pronounce it. It was a foreign sounding word. It was a Germanic word. And so we just sadly lost them over time. And how I wish we had those K's, because I love them.
We want the kicking K's back.
We do.
Knees up, Mother Brown. Knees up, Mother Brown. Now, look, I want to hear your trio in a moment, but you promised to come back to handkerchief and a story
yes,
there.
Yes, I did. I was thinking about this, actually, this very morning. Just think of all the words which, as I say, once wore their hearts on their sleeve. So a secretary was once a secretary because a secretary was a keeper of secrets, which, of course, modern secretaries probably are too. A cupboard was a cupboard, board being a table. So it was originally a table with eventually a kind of chest with lots of shelves where you kept your cups. Breakfast, break fast. It's where you break your overnight fast. One of my favourite etymologies ever is the daisy. The daisy is a mangling of day's eye because it's a flower that opens its petals at dawn to reveal that central yellow disc and then closes them again at night. So it's the eye of the day. Daisy was day's eye. And there's so many where pronunciation, had it been kept and had it remained intact, would absolutely tell you so much about the history of the word and the thinking behind it, you know, of the people who coined it. But we've changed the sound, and so we've lost those memories.
Well, thanks to Something Rhymes with Purple, maybe there's going to be a revival in all this, and we're going to be saying daisy properly, and we're going to be having our knees knocking together knicely. No, it's not knicely, nicely. Well, that'll tell the difference. What is your trio? If you're regular to this podcast, and if you are, we hope you are, and we hope you review it and spread the word, but one of the features is we have a trio every time from Susie Dent of words that she thinks are interesting, and we then see if we find them interesting too, and they may have an interesting etymology or story behind them. What have you got for us today? New words?
Well, I should probably start with borborygmas. I'm not going to, simply because my stomach did just rumble, so anybody who heard that, apologies.
What was the word you said?
Borborygmas. That's a good spelling one. That's simply stomach rumbling. Well, that's not one of my first words.
Okay.
My first word is related to the title of our podcast, Something Rhymes with Purple. And that might seem a bit curious because purple famously has no rhyme. At least that's what people say. But there is one. If you delve into the most wonderful 19th century work by somebody called Joseph Wright, who's this fantastic man who went collecting local dialect from up and down the land and came up with the English Dialect Dictionary. It is a treasure trove of local words. Anyway, in there, you will find the word herple, spelled H-I-R-P-L-E. It does rhyme with purple. And to herple is to limp and to walk with difficulty, especially after a very, very long walk.
I love it.
To herple.
Herple rhymes with purple. That's why we are so called. And the point of this whole podcast is it does pay to increase your word power. Mm. I mean, you know, language is power. The better you use the language, the more successful, the happier you will be. Two more from your piece.
Okay. Well, this one relates to spelling. It's, again, one of those words that has siblings that might possibly help you remember how to spell it. I'm hoping you probably won't need to spell it too often, and that's sarcophagus.
Sarcophagus. That being like a tomb? Like
a tomb.
I think of it as being made of stone, a sarcophagus.
Absolutely right. It's got a C in it, and you can remember that by knowing it's related to sarcasm, because a sarcophagus was sort of, as you say, limestone tomb that would gradually decompose the body that was buried within it. It's related to sarcasm because the origin of sarcasm was biting flesh. So the idea is that if somebody makes a sarcastic remark, it's so caustic that it actually burns your flesh.
Biting flesh. How do we spell the rest of sarcophagus?
It's sarcophagus.
And what's
so it's flesh swallowing.
And what's
so it's
the
related
fungus?
To esophagus.
What's the fungus?
It's related to esophagus. It's a kind of swallowing bit.
Oh, my God.
And
as in esophagus.
Grim. Exactly. Esophagus.
All these things linked together. This is, my God. This is why when I wanted my appendix out, I felt you would be the person. Anyway, go on.
Okay,
What's the third one?
The third one is just a useful one. It's something I do every single morning, but particularly at the weekend. It is pandiculating. Pandiculating is a word that simply means stretching and yawning at the same time.
Pandiculating.
Yes. It doesn't really sound like it. But,
I'm pandiculating now.
Exactly.
Because I've had such a relaxing time with you.
Good.
I love our podcasting together. I really do. Those are three fabulous words. And I love knowing that sarcasm comes from biting flesh.
It's quite grim.
Because I like making the odd sarcastic remark
myself.
I know. biting flesh. That's it for this time. What are we calling this podcast now?
Something Rhymes with Purple.
Something Rhymes with Purple. And now we know it does. If you've enjoyed it, please review us. Give us whatever the maximum is. Or just keep quiet. And if you liked it, tell your friends. It's Giles Brereth. It's Susie Dent. It's Something Rhymes with Purple. And it's purple. I'm going to limp off into the sunset with my knees knocking.
Come with you.
Oh, good.